Good morning, everyone. This morning, I wanted to talk about a theme that has been alive for me and also mentioned in actually several of our chants and some of them that we did today. And there's one that we do in every sutra service, and it's called the Five Remembrances. It goes like this. I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature of change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. My deeds are my closest companions. I am the beneficiary of my deeds. My deeds are the ground on which I stand. The first time I went to Spring Hill, so long ago, and we did the sutra service, and we chanted this chant, and the thought arose for me of, I think that's probably the most negative chant I've ever heard. And I had aversion arise. I didn't like it. It is now, I would say, my favorite chant, although it's hard to pick. But I, if I have to pick one as a favorite, I think it is this one, and I am grateful that it is part of every sutra service. And the theme that that I wanted to talk about today is this: no way to escape. It's mentioned several times in this chant. No way to escape growing old, having ill health, dying, being separated from everyone I love. No escaping. And for me, this is pointing to fundamental teaching, no way to escape being human. This body that I have is growing old. This body gets sick. I am going to die. I know not when or how. I am going to die. And people I love have and continue to die. As many of you know, my mother is dying of dementia. It's a slow and painful death. Painful for me. I am grateful that she appears to have no pain. But it is exceedingly painful for me. And there is no escape from this. No escape from being human. No escape from myself. As I reflect on my past, I see that I spent a lot of time and energy coming up with ways to escape myself. Starting from when I was maybe a teenager, or maybe a little bit before that, I think, as I recollect. There was a way about me, there were things about me that I just found totally unacceptable. And I got the messages from my culture and my society that those things were unacceptable to them as well. And I sought escape. And one of the ways I did that was I tried to do everything right. I tried to never make mistakes. I tried to be perfect. I thought if I could just do everything perfectly, I would avoid this suffering that comes with being human. It was so painful. I would venture out into the world, whether it was at school or other areas of my life, and I would blunder my way through, and it would be so painful to see the mistakes I made and the harm I caused, the pain I caused other people, or sometimes even just my inability to meet anyone. There was a period of time I could barely meet anyone's eyes, often head down, no eye contact, too ashamed to be Laura. This wanting to escape, wanting to run from myself, not knowing it at the time, but this is upon reflection now. As time went on, I found other ways to escape as well. And one of them, I call it running. Not literally. I'm not an athletic person. I did not run. But I ran in lots of other ways. I have been blessed with a tremendous amount of energy, physical energy. My mother used to tell the story of how from the day I was born, even lying in the little bassinet, my legs were constantly moving. It was as if I could not wait to get up and get going, doing something. So, quite naturally, I fell into an escape called being busy, doing things, which turned into an escape of working, something that we all find our place doing, taking our place, contributing to our world with our work. And it was a place for me where I could forget a lot of other things that were disturbing me. I could really, I put my whole self into that work. I see now quite a distraction. Not paying attention to what is arising right here. Not having a way to cope with the pain. Turning away. And I actually would like to take the opportunity now to thank my mind for saving me in this way. Sometimes things are so difficult and so painful that all we can do is turn away. When I have no other way to go. So you might imagine then that when I came to this practice and learned that this practice is about turning toward what's here, all of these arisings in the mind, in the body, emotions, feelings, turning toward them and being with them quite a radical suggestion. And for me it has been a life-saving practice. And I particularly want to point to something that's been exceedingly valuable to me in this practice, which is sitting still. This stopping. I am quite comfortable with constant motion. I enjoy it. My body revels in it. When I learned that the practice would be sitting still for 25 minutes at a time, I tell you truly, I was really not sure if I could do this. I don't think I had ever sat still for 25 minutes in my life. Quite something. On the wonderful suggestion of my husband, my life, love, and partner, he suggested I could start 5 minutes at a time. And I found I was actually able to sit still for 5 minutes. It was quite a revelation to me that I actually could do it. I definitely had my doubts, even for 5 minutes. Something about this sitting still. The bell rings, and at the end of the sound of the third bell, we vow, we promise not to move. To sit still with what's here. No escape. No getting up and moving about. There are times what arises for me is my mind loves the stillness. The busyness of my life can be so overwhelming. The pull of the world so strong to keep getting one more thing done. One more thing, one more thing. You can do it. Energizer bunny that I am. I can keep going, keep going. But something really important about this stopping, this practice of stopping and sitting still in the midst of whatever is arising. And I express great appreciation for this as a practice, meaning practicing, continuing to practice sitting still. And I am grateful for the times that it arises for me in my busy life. Not too long ago, I had an interaction with someone, and it did not go well. And my habit energy arose to rush in and try to fix the situation, to repair the damage, and try to smooth things over, and all of these natural tendencies that I have, that maybe many of you have too. And something happened. This practice of stopping arose. And I was able, in that moment, to stop and to stand still. And see what would arise. I don't say that I practice so that that will happen. I say that I am grateful that the practice arose in that moment of stopping. So this no escape, no way out. Something really important for me about knowing that escaping is off the table. And still seeing my strategies arise. How to get out of this really uncomfortable place. And I love this image that I hear Steve say about nailing his foot to the floor and staying with what's here. It resonates so strongly with me, of course, because I love to run in all its different forms of running. And this this chant that we also did this morning, our ancestor Dogen, he also talks about this escaping. And I love this line about when you see an object, learn to clarify it. Being scared of it and only trying to avoid it is not the teaching and practice of the great vehicle. He says, if you give up the east and hide in the west, it is not that there is no object in the west. Even if you keep escaping, there are objects afar and objects nearby. He further comments, the farther away you push objects, the deeper you become attached to them. And then, this is not the way of emancipation. Investigate this thoroughly. So, this is not the way of emancipation. I truly thought this escaping was. I thought it would get me to some place where I could be happy and comfortable all the time. That's what I thought I was seeking. This is the message that I got from my culture, from my society, from 17 magazine. Figure out how to be happy. Figure out how to stay there. Figure out how to be comfortable. Figure out how to make that possible all the time. And Dogen holds up, but this is not the way to freedom. This is not the way to liberation that that we have been singing about for this coming and going retreat. This is not the freedom, the liberation that our practice offers us. To be free in the midst of whatever is arising. to be totally free as I sob with the pain of my mother dying. To be totally free with agitation of to be totally free with whatever is arising. The sadness, the joy, the delight, the laughter, the grief, the pain, emotional, physical, to be totally free. We can sometimes hear the teachings of Zen as, there's this going to be this place where there's no suffering. If I could just get there, I must not be doing it right because I'm not there yet. There must be a secret. I'll keep looking. I'll keep trying to find it. Right. And this, no escape from being here. And this freedom that is available right here. There's another chant that we did earlier in the Sesshin. It says something like, the possibility is always there for us to open the shackles of our mind. To be free amid suffering. To be free amid whatever is arising in this moment. Thank you. So please sit comfortably, and please be invited to join in a Dharma dialogue. And
And I wanted to first welcome Boundless Way guiding teacher Diane Fitzgerald Sensei, who has joined us. So if you've been saving up the difficult questions, you now have a resource. Yes. Thank you, Diane. Yeah. Great to have you. Yeah, so she'll join in the responses.
Yes.
When you were talking about your mother who's dying of dementia, I can relate to this process of my mother-in-law's just recently died of dementia. And my father had dementia, though it wasn't quite as extreme as my mother-in-law, because he still knew who I was at the end. But what kind of came up, and it also came up last night in the talk, and it's not, well, it's kind of related to your talk, but it has more to do with our bodily function, our, what's it called, wonderful function. because I was visiting my father. I didn't know that it was the last thing I paid to him. He died a few weeks later. He was in hospital in his bed. He was not able to eat himself or take a drink. He was very poorly. Of course he had nappies on because he no longer could get up and go to the toilet. And while we were talking, he suddenly started to say, "What's happening? I don't know what's happening. Something's happening. It's something." And he was trembling, and then he said, "And it's all wet and warm." And I realized for the first time maybe in his whole life, and he was nearly 90, he's experienced his bodily function of going to the bathroom, going to release urine. And that amazed me. And that amazed me. I've never thought that actually we don't ever really feel that. Not necessarily. Maybe as babies. Well, for me it was kind of a revelation.
Yeah.
And also with my mother-in-law, very similar thing. She didn't know who I was, who her sons were anymore. And yet there was a sense. She had a sense. And it was a very touching moment. It was also the last time I actually saw her. And we just decided to take her out on a walk in a wheelchair. And we went on much too long a walk. And we intended, but we ended up on this path. And she didn't know who we were at all. And we were a little bit worried that it had been too long for her. And then when we came back, and she just said to me, said to us, it's just so lovely to be with such loving people.
Yeah.
And so this was, for me, yeah. Also, it took away that pain of her not knowing who we were, not being able to communicate anymore with her, or anything like that, but she felt that we'd, that was an act of love.
That's great. These such touching moments, and what I'm struck is that how available they are. You know, sometimes we think, oh, it has to be this way or has to be that way, but in your two stories, and I'm sure in the many stories we could share, these moments of intimacy, you know, we were talking about farts yesterday, and now we're talking about peeing, so I think we're really getting down to it here. You know, if we can really use those as resources, limitless possibility. Thank you, Diane.
You know, it makes me recall 30 years ago talking with some Dharma friends, and especially one person in particular who just had this brilliant mind, and his father had started to have dementia, and he was worried that all this practice would eventually just fall away and be useless. You know, in his practice, his teachings, he became a teacher, were mostly about paying attention, you know, in sort of this sharp, clear way. And as the years have gone on, I keep thinking about that worry that he had. And actually, I still am in touch with him sometimes, and he's started to lose his memory. And yet, there's this other arising that's coming up in him and in all the people that I know. And I think of David's stepfather, who has a kind of a brain injury to his brain that causes a form of dementia, short-term memory loss. And his, you know, his moment to moment, this is it, this is it. It's not, I don't want to glorify it. It's really painful. But it's like there's, the worries that I had 30 years ago seem ridiculous now in hearing stories like yours. Because what happens when we're really honest about what we're here on the planet for, everything dissolves into love. You know, and I love that David's stepfather, when I'm with him, he knows, still knows who I am because his long-term memory hasn't been affected at all. But you know, what where are we going? What are we doing? And I don't remember that well. And then I also just want to end with an anecdote. When I first started working in nursing homes and hospices and things, I remember sitting with an old woman who was really, had profound dementia. And I was young, I didn't know what to do with her, so I just sat with her, and she kept pointing to the ceiling light, and I looked up, and, you know, light? No. Light bulb? No. what is it? And then finally she said, And she pointed to herself, and she pointed to me. And I said, light? And she relaxed. Right? Wow. Amazing. These lessons. So, light? Yes.
Ed.
Sort of along the same lines. You know, what struck me is that, you know, this no escape. You know, death is one thing. It's dementia. You know, I'm of the nature to become demented. You know, and we all are. And that's, for many of us, that's probably much more frightening than the idea of us simply dying.
Yeah.
And when I look at relatives, you know, my mother, my father, my mother-in-law, all of these people who have died, or my mother-in-law is still with us and is demented. They gave me a gift, and that was this notion that there's a way to go about dying. There's a way to face that end. My mother was really good at it. Really good at it. And when I stop and think of her, I think of my kids. And what am I going to leave them? You know, how can I look to where my mother, what my mother prepared? She, you know, she got her entire affairs in order. She knew exactly what it was she wanted. My mother-in-law, you know, sort of denies that she's ever going to die, but my mother, you know, she almost reveled in it. And it was this incredible gift that, you know, I will die. I may well become demented. But there's a way to prepare. There's a way to kind of like give that as a gift to those who come after. You know, I volunteered for a while in an elementary school in Oakland, and I remember sitting there with these third graders and thinking, these are the people who are going to be changing my dependents. and I want them to know that sort of love, that sort of, that's a mess, you know? but it happens, and, you know, we all wind up facing that. And we can face it with a certain amount of grace. I hope.
Thank you.
And right here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, so wonderful to bring in again the vividness of our parents, our teachers, everyone who teaches us, and then so you want to practice dying? That indeed is what we're doing, moment after moment, and we can only die with what we've got right now. But as Laura said, I loved how you talked about practice. You know, really. Really practice this no escape so that we can vividly in this moment. And I think we set an example for each other when we do this, when we sit upright and don't move, as you say, no matter what, dying again and again. Such a great gift we have, that our death is the gift we have to give each other. And we don't have to wait to give it.
Yeah. I appreciated your message about the 17 magazine. What I think of as the poisonous culture that we grow up in, live in, messages that we get on TV, commercials, and all of us were supposed to be happy because our toilet bowl is now shining, that sort of thing. it's really as dangerous, as poisonous. And, you know, for so much of our lives, for so many people, you know, where do you turn to for sanity, for some way out of that, or to be protected from that poison? So I appreciated that.
Thank you. And you know, it sometimes, can't see it at the time, can only see it as I am away from it, you know, for many years and look back. And this, I think for me, this, this awareness of the causes and conditions of my life, that, this being, not just encouraged, but actually, I felt it was kind of a demand, you know, to turn away from who I really am. You know, the tears well up, and somebody says, "Oh no, now is not an appropriate time to cry," you know, or the anger comes, "Oh no, girls don't get angry," right, or whatever messages we may have got, or they don't get angry that way. Don't say those words. Don't raise that fist. You know, you can go over here and talk quietly about it. You know, but in that, you know, these messages are some of them are very overt. Some of them are much more subtle, and they just kind of seep in, and they certainly seeped into me. You know, and this practice of waking up, of being willing to look, to see what is here, what is this arising that's here, and this this container that we hold together that says, you know, when the tears come up, yes, weep. Not that that's not an appropriate time. Quite a thing to practice, and practicing, ing, you know, not something that maybe that we're gonna like master. Like, now I've got it, you know, and I'll just always be able to do this. Because these subtle messages about not doing it are, they creep in, and they, you know, they're there before I even realize it. Tears arise, and all of a sudden it's like, nope, good, not now, you know, and I go, really, why not, you know, but it's this questioning that we, this investigation that this practice offers us, that allows once in a while for me to be able to go, why not, why am I pushing these tears down, you know, yeah, and let them flow down my face, wherever I am. Yeah, that's what I think.
And a shout out to 17 Magazine for being one of the causes that brought Laura to this chair.
Thank you. I have a totally different perspective.
Letter to the editor.
Sometimes what most disturbs us is the Buddha appearing to free us from our very sins that make us suffer over and over again. So.
Exactly, and you know, I was so glad that you read that little Dogen piece,
yeah,
just to make the 17 causes and conditions karmic, bringing you here, that Diane just talked about, and that piece that, you know, we meet everything, and 17 Magazine is about escape. And there's a place for escape. And Dogen's really clear. We've been very clear about that all these weeks, about the pendulation. You know,
yeah,
sometimes you meet it really hard, and then you have to pull away and say, nope, not now. And that, nope, nope, not now, as Dogen says in that piece. So, you know, you, what is it, something like you go to the, you avoid the east and you escape to the west.
Right.
But there's an object in the west.
Yeah.
You know, you could, even in the pulling away, there's something very, very useful. And, you know, and as Diane's pointing out, the causes and conditions that bring us here, it's all it.
Yeah.
Right? So but deep bows, right?
Yeah, totally.
To applying oneself in to withdrawing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And that withdrawing, you know, this I see as I look back on my life and the places when I most withdrew, actually saved my sanity. So I am bowing deep gratitude to that. And I love this motion that I'm moving my hand back and forth, forward and back. And when you talk about pendulation, and the thing that really struck me about it is how many options there are in between all the way in and all the way out. And I notice sometimes I go in and I touch it and then all the way back and away, right? And sometimes I can be more in other places too. Just noticing that so many options in this pendulation, you know, going in and out.
Yeah.
Laura, I just found it so helpful and resonating, your story about the escape and the busyness. And one of the things I realize is that as we sit on the cushion, we learn about what we've been doing to escape. It comes up so vividly. But then that can become its own story. Oh, well, now I can't do that anymore. And if you think about it, your energizer bunniness has been such a gift to the world, to boundless way, to the Dharma. And so, of course, you don't have to stop doing what you did as an escape. What this practice gives us is more freedom to not escape, to stay with whatever we were running from, but also to use that positive energy and that positive coping skill for the good of the world. Not have to push that away either.
Thank you so much, Bob. Really important, really important point. Hi, Esther.
So I have a question. I don't know if pendulation is an English word. What would you call it?
It's what a pendulum and a clock does.
So what is it? Is it pendulation?
If you yes. About
it? Yeah, that's it. So when our children, talking about your mother, made me think of, when our children realize that we won't be here forever, and perhaps you can hear that we're chanting something every morning through the floors, and being a generation of the 17 magazine, any reflections or experiences, how do we hold as they go in and out of that, meeting with impermanence, meeting with attachment and love, and you know, I want to offer to raise her in a way with this change and with not being afraid if someone is falling ill. Does that mean that they're going to die? You know, there's a polarization. You know, we just stay healthy and eat the right foods and meditate and do yoga. So my mother's probably not going to die. Well, she will, and she might go to the hospital and get put on. So how do we, any ideas on how to include our families in practice?
Well, I think of when a four-year-old asks where babies come from, you don't give the whole story. but how to really encounter our daughters or our friends' issues where they are. There's nothing to be taught, in a sense, but as it arises, say, so what is it? How is it for you? And to be with her wherever she is with it. You know, to really key off the question or the concern, and not to have to fix it or say the right mm-hmm. thing. That's what arises for me first. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what came up for me is how valuable to have the opportunity to offer a way to be with the fear or the question, just the not knowing, or the, you know, whatever is this arising that has caused the question, right? So I'm afraid. Oh, so, you know, so that this opportunity to see that, oh, and how can we be with this fear, right? No, we don't have to run from it. That's one option, right? We actually can find a way to be together with this fear. Yeah, you know, I'm afraid to. Yeah. Or however it arises for us in the moment, right? But this practice that we do, we find a way to, as David says, not to explain that, well, there's this thing called Zen, and, you know, da, da, da. But it's this actual, you know, this actual meeting of another human being who's small and has different, you know, not all of the things have been explained so far, right? And not necessarily needing to explain, but simply to say, oh, so here's how we can meet this together, yeah?
Yeah, so let's continue our practice to meet what